Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Our guest today on the Coach and Coordinator Show is Ted Kimme. Ted Kimme is a 2008 West Point graduate who played offensive line there. He was recently promoted from the offensive coordinator position to head football coach at Satellite High School. During his five-year active duty term with the U.S. Army in Germany, Kimme coached youth and semi-pro football and has been at Satellite the 3 years since. We're excited to have him here today and learn especially about his leadership system at Satellite High School. Coach Kimme, welcome to the Coach and Coordinator Podcast.
Hey, Keith. Glad to be here.
Coach, let's talk about how you made this transition and you know, from being a guy who was at West Point in the Army, and then you become a high school football coach. What made you want to be a football coach?
In high school, I had a mentor, my high school head coach. His name is John Flath. He played at Florida State under Bobby Bowden, and he's a real kind of faith-based coach, and he was essentially, you know, like a second father to me. And, you know, he kind of not only led me in the direction of going into the military and going to West Point, but, you know, he also kind of steered me in the path of being a coach in my future and kind of put that bug in my ear. And I believe he saw something in me, and I thank him for it. But, to be honest with you, the transition from the military and going into being a head coach and all that stuff, it's been different, because in the military, to be honest with you, Keith, you know, as an officer, when you say something, they got to do it. Whereas, you know, when you're a high school head coach, or even just as a teacher in the classroom, you know, you'd be amazed at some of the ways students will attempt to treat you, and you got to earn that trust, and you have to earn that respect, and it's not just given. And it's that obviously is totally different than the military, but it's something that I've had to learn and adjust to. But to be honest with you, you know, Coach Flath kind of steered me in this direction from the beginning. And I tell you what, football has been such an important part of my life, and it has given me so much. And I felt that I had to give back to something that had given me so much. And I think that's what most of us coaches are out there, and we feel the same way about that and the game, and just, you know, keeping the game the way we always knew it, and holding the reverence for it. And I just feel like being a head coach, I'm able to do that for the game I love so dearly.
And obviously, you know, there is that difference where you have to build a rapport before you can, you know, command and demand from your players. So there's that difference between coaching a high school player and being in the military. But I think a lot of coaches point to the military as something that's similar to running a football team. What things did you learn in the military that you now apply to your career as a head high school football coach?
I mean, there's a couple things that I, you know, as when I started out as a platoon leader, you know, you're a 22-year-old second lieutenant, fresh out of West Point. You're as green as the grass on the ground. You think you know everything, but you definitely don't. And I think that was something for me as a high school coach. That experience as a platoon leader was a humbling experience. And, you know, you found out pretty quick that there's individuals that you need to rely on to be successful, especially those experienced individuals. And then on top of that, you got to be a lifetime learner. You got to self-reflect all the time. You got to get constant feedback from your peers and from your superiors, you know, so that you're continuously developing. And I think that's something that not only did I take with me every day in the classroom as a teacher, but in the same way as a high school coach, you know, having to stand up there in front of your platoon for the first time and introduce yourself, you know, it's, you got guys who have been in the military for, you know, 25 years looking at you going, all right, second lieutenant, you know, what do you got for us today? Let's hear about you. And it's a, you know, and you're charged with leading those individuals into combat if necessary and bringing them back safely. And I think, you know, I kind of had to humble myself and say, look, you don't know everything. You're going to have to rely on those that might, you know, have the information that you need. And I've taken that right now into being a head coach. You know, I'm 3 months into the job. I've been the offensive coordinator here for the last 3 years, and I was recently promoted to head coach. And I've had to take some time not only to self-reflect as to who I am as a coach, and to think about, you know, what am I going to lead for our culture in this program. And how am I going to lead that? And I've used my experience in the military to allow me to, you know, kind of develop my plan and the way ahead for our program.
Coach, what was the result of that reflection and that process that you went through? You know, what are you now as the head coach doing as a leader and doing to instill culture, you know, that culture in your team?
Yeah, I mean, I think when, you know, being in the military, like I said, you know, when you're standing in front of that platoon, you have a designed mission, and that mission obviously may change from day to day, but at the end of the day, it's to take soldiers, provide some purpose, direction, and motivation, and get them somewhere where they didn't think they could go themselves. You know what? And you being a football coach, and all of us listening to the podcast, I mean, we all know that that's the same thing that we're doing in a football program. So I had to kind of think about what's our mission. And to be honest with you, Keith, I stole a little bit of it from the West Point mission. It's our mission here at Satellite Football is to educate, train, and inspire each Scorpion football player so that each proud graduate is an uncommon leader of character who embodies our values and traditions and is prepared to change the world. And I think there's a couple key things I want to focus in on that mission is, you know, I said I want to develop uncommon leaders. And I think so many times we say, I want to develop men. And I agree. I think we're all on the same page when it comes down to our jobs as head coaches and to be in the cultural and moral compass of our program. But I want to develop leaders. I want to develop leaders that will change the world. And I think if I had to you know, summarize just our program in a nutshell and kind of our mission and what we're here to do, that would be it in one sentence. And I think the other key word that I want to focus in on is uncommon. And I took a lot from, you know, Tony Dungy's book. And I also took some from, there's a guy named Luke Mertens. He wrote an article on X&O Labs, and him and I have talked back and forth about this concept. But, you know, teenagers today are pushed to follow the status quo. And a lot of them make decisions that they regret. And, you know, I'm pushing our young individuals in this program to be different. And I think you and I know so many coaches and mentors and leaders and people in our lives that have done things and been successful in their life. They're all uncommon people. They're all people who didn't follow the status quo. They're all people who went against the grain. They're all people who weren't afraid to challenge things and ask hard questions. And I also take a lot from, you know, Kevin Kelly, you know, from Arkansas. You know, he talks about that all the time. Ask the hard questions. You know, why are we not asking the hard questions? So, you know, this whole uncommon concept and this leader concept is something that I feel extremely passionate about. I studied leadership development at West Point. I actually got my bachelor's in leadership development. So, I would say that kind of summarizes what I'm trying to push here in the culture of our program.
Coach, obviously that's you know, some very inspiring words, and what you want to do is, you know, especially I think the way you've used the language in saying uncommon leaders. So what's the exercise to do that? Because you mentioned in your mission the word educate. So obviously you have to educate your players. You want them not just to learn those concepts, but to start to take action. How is that process going to work for you at Satellite?
Yeah, and I actually just listened to the Brian Kite podcast. Man, that was fantastic. I mean, I feel like we are just really on the same page here at Satellite with a lot of the things that he was talking about. Does that mean that we're good at them? No, but I think we're headed in the right direction when it comes to, you know, having a cultural playbook. Right now, we have a cultural blueprint is what we're calling it. It's got our mission. It's got our purpose, which is to be uncommon. It defines what uncommon means. And then it has our core behaviors and our core values, essentially, you know, who we are and how we behave in our program, and then what the outcomes are for those behaviors. If we do behave in this way and we do believe in this way, these are the outcomes that we can achieve based on, you know, all of that blueprint that I had described before. So when he talked about, he said, you know, coaches are really, really good at talking about X's and O's. And I agree with them. You know, we just went to a clinic here and I was with my entire coaching staff and we went out to lunch and, you know, we probably could have spent about 4 hours, you know, arguing over, you know, what formation is good inside the 20 or arguing over, you know, what third down defense we're going to use. And, you know, we could spend forever talking about that stuff, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. But I kind of stopped the conversation and I said, I just posed the question. I said, you know, remember all that stuff we talked about with our culture of our program and that blueprint, how are, and then I just kind of pointed at some coaches. And I said, how are you going to ensure that and teach and educate, and then not just teach and educate, but empower these young individuals to take that teaching and put it into practice. And then on top of that, how are you going to hold them accountable? Oh, it was like crickets, Keith. and as it should, I mean, that's a hard question.
I mean,
that's probably the, if I you know, was in their shoes, and that's part of my job as well, is not just to educate and develop players, but it's also to coach coaches as well. And, which is a whole nother, you know, task. So I think that was kind of the first step in our program to kind of take that step to start having the hard conversations that most coaches don't necessarily, I don't know if they don't want to talk about it, but it's just harder to talk about. So we just avoid it and talk about what's easier. So, or what we know. So, I'd say, you know, when it comes down to teaching our players and giving them the tools to be successful in this culture, it starts with the coaching staff and it starts with having conversations with players about what these terms mean, what it looks like. And I think that's what part of what Brian said is yes, you can have the poster, you can have the core values, you can have the core behaviors, but now you got to have talking points and you got to have conversations. You got to ask questions. And Luke Mertens, he was totally open with me. He actually wrote a book called, I'm totally throwing his name out here, and I don't think he minds because he was totally open with me about it. But he basically wrote a book for his team about uncommon characteristics, and the entire thing, it's about 80 pages long. He sent it to me, and I know he's willing to share it with everybody, but it has like worksheets in it. It has stories about different you know, examples of people who are being uncommon, and it had different examples of core values like relationships and commitment and attitude and work ethic and competitiveness, and they were each was its own chapter. And so we're going to use that. You know, I'm ruthlessly, or you know, I am stealing that from him, and he's okay with that. But I think starting with, like, you know, Brian said, you got to have a system. I think starting with that, at least, we'll get the conversation going. And then I think, you know, then the coaching staff, it's on us to hold players accountable and then have, and hopefully it becomes a self-reinforcing type deal.
Yeah. And, you know,
you brought up Brian Kite and this whole idea of, you know, what your assistants have to do. And actually, last night we had a tweet chat, and Brian was one of our panelists. And the first question was, you know, how important are the assistants in training that culture? And Brian's reply was that assistant coaches have more interaction with direct contact with the players than the head coach. So they must be the culture, and it can't be owned by the head coach only. It can't be outsourced to the head coach. It's everyone's right. job. So, you know, it starts with your assistants, but obviously then it filters down to your team leadership, and then yep. to you know, the team as a whole, your younger guys, etc. How are you setting up, I guess, the leadership development? So you obviously are asking your head coaches to be the culture. What's your next layer of leadership? Is it your captains? Is there a team council? How are you putting that together?
Yeah. So we have what we're calling here. We're calling it the U crew. So the U stands for uncommon. So and what we ask players to do, and basically to simplify our core values and behaviors into one word, we're just going to say, be the ultimate teammate and be the ultimate uncommon teammate. So that's kind of the catchphrase that we're looking for. And each month we're going to have players vote, and they're going to vote for who the ultimate teammate of the month is. And that person is going to get inducted into what we call the U crew. And they get, you know, they get like a wristband that says, you know, uncommon on it. And they're, you know, they're going to wear it at all times. And then they're going to be required, that group is going to be required to memorize what we've come up with is called the uncommon creed. And they're going to have to memorize that uncommon creed. But that entire group, that U crew, is basically going to be our leadership council. They're going to be and you're not eligible to, you know, to be a, you know, a game team captain if you're not in that council and that U crew. So that's kind of how we're going to start building that leadership development aspect of it. And then the U crew will meet consistently throughout the year. And I've got some materials that we'll utilize, because what I've recognized is, yes, there is applicable on the field, in the weight room, leadership experiences and opportunities to learn and for players and for potential leaders on the team. But you cannot neglect the classroom aspect of it as well, where you can sit together in a group and have conversations. Because if you're not sitting and having these conversations, then there is no application, or it's always in the moment application. And obviously, you know, I think we all can agree that yes, sometimes you learn best in those moments. But we will spend some classroom time together. I have a whole unit that we've developed that I got from West Point, the psychology department, that came. It's all about Band of Brothers, and you basically watch parts, or you'll watch an episode, and there will be a certain set of questions and a worksheet that you'll have to answer, and it'll be based on certain scenes from Band of Brothers that show different leadership challenges that apply directly to being a team leader. And so we'll do stuff like that. So I think developing the leaders, like you said, beyond the coaching staff is definitely my second priority.
Yeah, that series is so good. Is that something that is available for all coaches, or was that something you know, you got exclusively from
your... I have it. It's basically just a Word document, and it goes through each episode, and it has, like, you know, specific parts of the episode that it asks about, and I will gladly share it with anybody that needs it.
That's great. We appreciate that. Coach, one of the things obviously Brian Kite talks about all the time is E plus R equals O, and I'm sure you're familiar with that. And we were talking, Brian and I were talking recently about, you know, some of his work with the Ohio State Buckeyes, and he talked about, you know, Urban's right-hand man, Mickey Marotti, and Mickey said his job is to create those E's, you know, to create those events.
Yeah.
In other words,
right.
create – situations where players have adversity and they need to respond. And obviously, as you take all this leadership and everything you're building out onto the field, there are going to be those situations your players have to face adversity. It's what this game really is about, is facing that adversity and creating the outcomes you want through the proper response. How are you training some of those things in right now in the off season?
Yeah, I mean, every day in the weight room, you know, we'll start out. We have a rule that there's no, you know, you don't lean on anything. You don't sit down. You can take an athletic knee if you need to in the weight room. You know, there's no yawning. There's, you know, we really treat it like a place of business. And I think most coaches would agree that your championship is built in there. And so the weight room is a place not only where obviously you get physically developed, but it's a place that if you can utilize it correctly and in the right ways, that you can mentally develop your players as well and also leaders in your program. So I got a couple ideas for the summer that I think, you know, because again, I've been on the job for 3 months, so I have been drinking from the fire hose a little bit. You know, I have been getting my feet underneath me and trying to hit the ground running. But this summer to me is going to be an opportunity to kind of take that weightlifting and weight program and utilize it as something to create adversity that allows players to develop that response and understand what it feels like to operate in adverse situations. Because like you said, the entire game is about adversity, and you must be able to function in those times. And one of the things that we like to say is, and again, I try to grow and develop as a coach all the time and to learn. And I think we all as coaches know and understand that we all share information. And I think one of the things that Dabo Swinney said, he said, we overbelieve in this program. We have faith. We overbelieve. And I think that's one of the things that the key words we're going to talk about is even in those moments, in those ease, you know, overbelief is a response that we can utilize to meet the demands or the you know, the what might seem overwhelming. And and I think the other one that I had listened to is Michael Gervais. He worked with the Seattle Seahawks on their ability to handle, you know, E type situations and to operate in the most intense and violent environment. And he talked about that if you get so used to ease and not only ease, but handling adverse ease and ease that might seem, you know, or what you would hope used to be overwhelming, then if you get so used to it that eventually you don't even recognize, you want to get to the point that you don't even recognize that it is an E or that it is an overwhelming E, that it's just another step. And I think that's something that we're going to have to continue to do here in the summertime in the weight room and on the practice field. So it's a constant learning process for me and for this program.
Coach, you mentioned something interesting and something I always made my part of my coaching is body language, right? The way that you look, especially in front of your opponents. And, you know, I would always train it during any kind of conditioning or, you know, late in practice, and you see a guy, you know, putting his hands on his knees or bending over like that. And, you know, you mentioned taking an athletic knee if you're tired. I'd always tell my players, like, you cannot show your opponent that you're feeling tired or that you're, you know, mentally overwhelmed or that you're frustrated or upset. Because if you have an opponent who's looking for those things, I mean, they're going to go after you. They're definitely going to create more ease for you in thinking in terms of E plus R.
Other sideline. Yeah.
Yeah. Yep. So how important is that to emphasize, and what, you know, what is the message that you're getting across to your players?
Body language is something that we talk about every day. So you hit on something that is huge in our program. You know, We also talk a lot about energy vampires and energy multipliers. You know, we want energy multipliers in our program. We don't want people to suck the life out of us when we're done having a conversation with them. We want to show up every day with a positive, enthusiastic attitude for what we're doing. And a lot of that goes into body language. And, you know, I'll go into the weight room every day and I make it a point to talk to every player and to get them to smile. And I think just having that positive energy, it's a force that is really tough to reckon with. I mean, you know, when I've decided we're getting ready to start spring football here in a week. And I've decided that in the beginning of practice, what we had done in the past, when I was here, but you know, obviously not head coach, what we had done is, you know, players would get ready for practice and then they'd walk out of the locker room or the field house or whatever. And then they'd stand on the practice field and they'd wait, you know, for the whistle to start. Right. And so what typically happens, when the players are standing there, they're, you know, messing around, they're, you know, trying to see how many helmets they can stack up on top of each other before it falls over, you know. And to me, the practice field, that's a place of business. Like, we're not going to step foot on the practice field till we're ready to go. So you know, one of my first things initiative that I kind of came up with for practice this year is that when you get ready, you're just going to wait in the locker room. So when I come into the locker room, I'm going to get all the players up together in front of me, and I'm going to look every single one of them in the eye and ensure we got the right body language and we got a smile. We'll do some sort of focus activity, you know, whether it's claps or get something fired up or just, you know, having fun and messing around, but something to get the team right, ensure that everybody's got the right positive, enthusiastic attitude ready to go to approach the day. And then I got one of the music students here. He's going to be my practice DJ or whatever. and we're just going to like fly out the door all at the same time, running as fast as we can. And he's going to hit the music, you know, like some AC/DC or something. And we're going to go right into dynamic warm up and we're going to get going. But I think to me, you know, that sets the entire tone. I mean, I think we've all been there as players. Practice is not fun, right? And sometimes there are moments where you're like, I do not want to be here. I get it. But if you can start the practice with a smile on your face, ready to go, at least in that moment, I know that you're ready. So that's something that we're going to do this year that hopefully reinforces the initiative that we're trying to push with body language and positivity, like you talked about.
That's pretty cool. I like that idea of a practice DJ. I know some people are doing that at the college level, so it's pretty cool that you're implementing it there. And it's neat that you're bringing in other parts of your student body to help you out on those things.
Yeah, it's amazing what's available on campus that you don't even think about. You're like, I wish we had this. And then, there's a whole graphic design department that could help me out with some social media flyers or whatever. But, you know, it's stuff that you would never even think about. And then I've just kind of started to pull the resources here. And it's what a great place that I'm at, because, you know, everybody's willing to support and give us the resources that we need.
Yeah, we have a podcast with Mark Zitto. He's from Louisiana. And he implemented a huddle class. He started a class for huddle where he was teaching them basically, you know, a lot of sports analysis. They would cut up his film. They'd label his film. He had like a social media department where they were putting together, you know, all the different things they would do for that. And it really, you know, and they weren't, he made sure that he only had a handful of football players in there, that they were students from outside the team. It was really neat how that became part of the school's culture, you know, and having them help out on game day. And you think about, if you look to the college level and just all the people who are involved now in the production of a game, you know, whether it's the social media things, the sports information, stats, people running your video, there's so many parts of that student body that you can get involved. And I think that really helps build a culture in a school as well. So some neat things that Coach Mark Zito put out there for us.
No, yeah, I love that. Yeah, I actually was at a clinic and they were talking about this huddle class, and that's I'll have to listen to that podcast, because that to me is something that we're kind of starting to scratch the surface on, and I'd be interested to see how we could do that better.
Well, Coach, you're doing a solid job at building culture and leadership. Let's talk a little bit about how that translates to what you do on the field. And you mentioned that you've been the offensive coordinator. So tell us a little bit about the offense that you run.
Yeah, we you know, to be honest with you, when we talked about being an uncommon person, an uncommon leader, an uncommon man, you know, I said to myself, well, we can't be different. We can't be different, you know, in the classroom, in the hallways, in the locker room, in the weight room, and then try to do something else on the football field. So we're going to be totally uncommon on the football field. You know, I'm going to take a lot of I did take a lot of influence from Kevin Kelly and some of the things that he does with going for it on fourth down and challenging the status quo and not being afraid to ask the hard questions. So we run a multi-tempo spread offense. So we run we essentially have five core run plays and then a bunch of pass plays that we'll utilize, obviously with some play action and some screens. But I'd say if you ask me for my offensive philosophy, I would say just get first downs. I mean, that's really kind of our simplified philosophy. And we're also kind of a take what you give us. You know, some people say, you know, do you run more? Do you pass more? I would say, well, we're going to take what you give us. We're going to exploit your weakness. So in the first quarter, you know, last year offensively, you know, we broke probably five or six offensive records, season records and game records. But an example of kind of what we do offensively is, when I say we take what you give us, is one game we threw for 330 yards, and then the next game we ran for 420. So we're multiple in that sense, but we don't necessarily lean in any one direction.
Coach, and being an up-tempo team and doing – you know, the things you do, what's your practice structure look like?
Yeah, I mean, I'd say we're, you know, I'd say we're multi-tempo. And the reason I say that is just because we do have a lot of kids that go both ways. You know, we're not necessarily blessed with a ton of depth at this point. We got about, I'd say we average around 70 to 75 kids in the program, and that includes a varsity and a JV program. We don't have like a ninth grade or a middle school program. But we also, so multi-tempo wise, you know, we'll run a base tempo, which is, you know, to snap the football as fast as possible. We'll run a freeze tempo, which is essentially, you know, a draw them off sides, mixed with a check with me if they don't jump off sides. And then we'll run a bullet tempo that we'll run in certain situations, like a short yardage type situation, which is essentially get lined up as fast as possible in a predetermined formation and run a predetermined play, which is, you know, same thing as like NASCAR and all that stuff. We just call it bullet. But and then we'll do that in short yardage situations. We'll also do that goal line situations, and we'll also do that in explosive play type situations. So we're not necessarily, you know, go full bore all the time. You know, I'm not hard headed enough to say that we won't there are times where we will slow it down, but we are committed to being an up-tempo team at the same time. So, you know, that's kind of our identity that we kind of instilled last year. And we were really scratching the surface. The one thing about being at like a beach type school where we're at, you know, we're a block away from the Atlantic Ocean. I mean, these kids, they love to be outside. They're very active type kids and they're in great shape. You know, 2 years ago, before we decided to run this up-tempo offense, we were running pro style I. We were running, you know, a huddle. Nothing wrong with any of that. But just what I saw in our program is, and against the teams we were playing, you know, we got to find a way to level the playing field, because, you know, as a high school coach, you're not necessarily in charge of the talent that you get. And there are some ways to level the playing field. And one of that is culture, right? Like we were talking about one of that. The other one is like your coaching staff and who you hire. That's important. And then the offensive and defensive and special team systems that you run, that's another way to level the playing field. So, and if you can have three of those going and maybe talent is average, maybe you can bridge the gap there. So we recognized while we were playing some of these teams, we were going slow. And a lot of the teams we were playing were gassed in the third quarter. I mean, they just were not conditioned. So last year we decided, hey, look, like let's just speed it up a little bit. I mean, if we just speed it up a little bit, I mean, they're already gassed in the third quarter and we're not really going that fast. And maybe we'll be able to, you know, again, bridge the gap. So that's something for us that we noticed was something we could utilize to compete in this county. And, you know, right now we're actually moving into the independent classification, but we were in class 5A here in Florida, and in our district, four of the five teams have won a state championship in the last 20 years. I mean, so you're talking just some perennial winners, and credit to those programs, but we just have never been that. So we're trying to change the game here. And last year we really did change the game on offense. So, getting back to your question, practice wise, you know, we, again, with limited resources and having a JV program, and not necessarily having as many kids. Last year, we would do an offensive day, then a defensive day. This year, we'll do like a split practice where we'll have, you know, the JV kids on one side, the varsity kids on the other side. And we'll have, you know, every varsity player will be practicing offense for, you know, 55 minutes. And we like to kind of, Scott Frost is here in Orlando. He's about, you know, a 45-minute drive. I went to their clinic and their camp and everything, and just what a great program and everything that they're doing there. But they talk about operating about 1 inch from out of control at their practice. And I would like to be there. I mean, and we try to, and that's why, you know, we do like to play the music and we do like to go fast and transition quickly between periods. But obviously, like I said, you know, with the amount of kids that we have and the amount of coaches and the resources, it is limited, but we do try to get to be as close to that as possible. So you would see if you'd come to a satellite high school practice, you know, you'd see us come out of the locker room. The music would hit, we'd hit dynamic warm up, and then we'd go straight into an indie period where the coaches would do some whatever they needed that day. And then we station water throughout with each position coach. They all have their own crate of water, so they're in charge of making sure that every 20 minutes they give the required water breaks for all the players. Because again, I saw before, we'd stop for a water break. You know, in the last 3 or 4 years, we'd stop for a water break and then the practice would just shut down. And now we've kind of delegated that out to the position coaches. And so we'll hit an indie period, but then we'll go straight into like an inside, and then and just your typical, you know, 7-on-7 pass pro. And then we'll hit some sort of team. But we like to have some sort of competition. You know, we'll do like a goal line. We'll do like a third down. We'll do a first down. But we'd like to get, again, that, like you talked about, creating ease and getting them used to competing and for practice being a little bit harder than what will happen on Friday nights. So that's just kind of our practice in a nutshell.
Coach, I got a follow-up question on your bullet tempo. I think that's a great way to use tempo, really, for any team. I think even a team that huddles could have something like that. You mentioned using it in short yardage goal line situations where you're going to get up to the ball in a, you know, pre-determined formation and play. And then after explosive plays, I think that's a great place, too. You got them on your heels. So just from a procedural standpoint, you know, how do you approach that? Is it something different that you use each week? How are you training that bullet tempo into your players?
Yeah, so we will, you know, game plan wise, you know, we'll predetermine what the formation and the play is going to be, and it may be multiple. You know, it may be two or three bullets that we might have that week. I'd like to keep it to at least, or at the most, two. But, you know, we really don't need that much. I mean, if you've ever watched, and I know you have, you watched, you know, Baylor, for example. I mean, if Baylor's second and one, third and one, they're lining up in 2x2 and they're running inside zone as quick as they can. And it's almost like everyone in the country knows it's coming, but they still can't stop it. And that's kind of something that we've recognized as well, is that, you know, especially when it comes to the high school football level, I mean, one thing that's been extremely important for us to recognize is that when you know, obviously, well, the whole world, I don't know how many people listen to this, but now the whole world knows we run up tempo, but no big deal. It doesn't really matter. But the point is that when you send a huddle game tape to somebody, and when you or another, an opponent, an exchange, it's hard to recognize that team is a up tempo team. And then on top of that, even if you do know, you have 3 days to prepare. And it's really tough on a defense to prepare at the high school level for that type of offense. And I think when you talk about the bullet, you know, tempo that we've been running here is, we'll see it in the game plan and we'll determine what that's going to be. And then we will have throughout practice built in, there will be times where it's scripted, like where I'll call, you know, we do hand signals and I'll call the bullet, you know, after, whether we're in a team period or even in an inside period, depending on what type of play it's going to be. And just mixing it in throughout those periods so that they're comfortable in the moment, quickly getting lined up and knowing what their assignment needs to be. And then on top of that, like I said, there will be some times where it is unscripted as well. And we will, you know, let's say we're in some sort of team period and I'll just all of a sudden just say, you know, bullet, 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 bullet. And I'll give the hand signal for that. And then, you know, just so again, football is a very variable game, right? Your plan is as good as, you know, we always said in the military, all plans are great until you get shot at. And it's kind of the same concept in football, that, you know, we all have game plans, but we all realize that and recognize that those are fluid and have to be adaptable in games. So we have to create that same thing in practice. So we try to do that.
Now, Coach, with the bullet, are you guys in just one personnel group throughout the game, or how do you adjust if you're in a you know, multiple personnel?
Yeah, I mean, what we'll typically do is it'll be some sort of, you know, run play. So, you know, if it's a short yardage. If it's a short yardage type situation, it'll be a run play. So it might be typically for us, it's just inside zone. So we can run that out of any formation that we have. And then the other thing, if we have an explosive play, a lot there will be times where we call, you know, just reload it. We'll just run the play again. I mean, we did that last year in two opening drives, and we were up 14-0 after those first two drives, and we basically ran the same play out of maybe the 10 plays we ran the same play like six times. So it was just something that we saw, whether it was game plan or even just something that maybe they came out with that we could exploit. And you know, we're going to force defenses to adjust. And if you're not going to adjust, you know, we're just going to keep exploiting it. So there are times, like I said, where we will just reload the play or even flip the play, depending on what hash we're on.
Yeah, I've always believed in that as an offensive coordinator, that it's not about tricking them, it's about out-executing them. And if you have them in something that's favorable to you and they're not going to adjust, then there's no reason to not keep running that play till they do something to stop you.
Amen. Yeah, I mean, you got to have, like we all say, you got to have the chalk last, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Coach, let's put the focus back on you for a little here and go back to the beginning. What's a mistake you made as a young coach, and what did you learn from it?
I think, you know, as a young coach, you can get so emotionally invested in that. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with that, but you could take things personally. And, you know, if you could, because you invest so much time and you're away from your families and you're away from your kids and you're there with them. And what I've realized is you got to have some compassion and understanding that even though these individuals are, you know, 14, 13, 15, 16, 17, 18 years old, that they still don't know. and you expect them to know everything, and you expect them to be like sponges and to soak it all up. And sometimes you realize that they're going to make mistakes. And as a coach, you could beat yourself up for that. You could say, oh, what is wrong with these kids? Or, you know, they're just not getting it. And I did that so much, you know, I would just take it so personal and say, do they just not like me or what? And I think I've come to realize that they're just kids and they don't mean anything by it. And they don't, and they're not doing it on purpose. You just got to teach them, and you just got to work with them, and you just got to keep on believing that it's going to come to fruition. And I think, you know, that's something that has really helped me calm down. And then the other thing, you know, Urban Meyer said in his book, especially as a head coach now, this happened, especially when I was a young coach, he said, and this line still sticks out to me from that book, is instead of getting furious, I get curious. And I think as a head coach now, you know, instead of, you know, and you can, of course, there is a place on the football field for some tough love, you know, although I believe after a tough love, you should give the kid a hug and explain why you did that. But there is, like I said, there is those moments, but instead of getting furious, think about why is this happening? And I think when I read that, man, it just like relieved so much pressure off of me. I was like, okay, like as a head coach, it's not necessarily my job to be the drill sergeant. Now, there are times where that will happen, don't get me wrong. But, you know, I think it's more of me saying, why is this happening? Why is this kid continuing to make the same mistakes? And then what can we do as an organization to set the process up and the system up to help him succeed in the moment that he might be failing? So that's, I guess, some advice that I would have for younger coaches and even just all of us new head coaches out there that are joining the ranks. And obviously those books that I kind of referred to are some things that everyone can utilize to help them.
Coach, as you're taking over this program, I'm sure you've been thinking a little bit about, you know, developing the program from the feeder system on up. What do you feel is the proper pathway, or what's the start for, you know, flag football, tackle football? Are you going to use some kind of modified game, which, you know, we've come out with here at USA Football? What do you think is the proper pathway for the development of a football player?
Yeah, I think, you know, when you talk about what USA Football is doing, it's just awesome. You know, you guys have really revolutionized the game when it comes down to the lower levels and given options for younger players and families to grow into football. And I think that's an important process that has to be utilized from the start of a young child's career in the football game. And I think I got a 6-year-old son, and he's getting ready to start all of this. And this is a constant conversation in my house right now with my wife and I. And you know, I'm of the mindset that, you know, he's going to start out in flag football. You know, I see some of these, I see some of the 6-year-olds, and they look like they could barely hold their heads up with a helmet on. It just doesn't look right to me. And, you know, as we continue to learn more about it and what USA Football is doing, I've realized that, especially for my own son, and what I believe should happen for most, or for every player out there, is that it should be a phased process. And I think right now we strap a helmet and shoulder pads on a 6-year-old and throw them out there. And, you know, I'm not saying that they're necessarily generating a lot of force, but, you know, again, that's impact on a kid. And I think, and not just impact, but you're talking about a learning process too. It's not just the physical development, but the mental development side of the game too. And I think the options that we have with USA Football to phase that learning and to phase that physical, the physical demands of the sport, I think are some just awesome options that I think should be utilized by everyone.
Coach, you mentioned having a young family. You're a new head coach. How are you going to create balance between the demands of the profession and your program and your family?
Yeah. Well, my daughter's four, so she's not necessarily old enough yet. But when she is, I'm going to ask her the same question. But my son, he's getting ready to turn seven, and we had a sit down conversation, and I said to him, I said, do you want to come with me to all the stuff that I do as a head coach? And he said, of course. You know, of course, he wants to be there for everything. And then I said, do you want to be on the sidelines during the football games? Yes. You could be the, you know, get the kickoff tee and do all this stuff. And he, oh, of course. And I said, okay, well, there's one rule. You got to be able to get out of the way if somebody's crashing on the sidelines. And he said, okay, Dad. All right, I got it. So that's my one rule with regard to my own son since he's six. And we'll get ready to be seven here soon, but you know, I'm gonna bring him with me, you know, to everything, and same with my daughter when she becomes a little bit older, and then on top of that with my wife, you know, I am extremely blessed to be just in an awesome community at a great school, you know, it's one of the best public educations in Brevard County, it's right across the street from the beach, you know, the culture of the school is uncommon. You know, we fit right into that culture, and it's really a hard place to fail. Teachers get to this place and they just don't leave. And there's a reason for that. And I don't envision myself leaving for a long time either. So, and then the other thing is when you talk about consistency in a program, you know, this program has been around for 55 years, and the longest a coach has ever been here is 6 years in the 55-year span. So I at least want to be here 7 years. So that's my first goal and my desire as a head coach to provide some consistency here. So I plan on being here a long time. That obviously helps my wife, you know, feel a little bit better and know where we're going to be. And then on top of that, I live 3 minutes away from the school. So, and my kids, I get to drive them. We basically have like a campus here where there's an elementary school and a middle school. It's all right next to each other. So I get to drive my kids to school in the mornings, and I'm really close to home. So I'm able to see everybody pretty easily. But at the same time, you know, it is spring break right now, and I am in my classroom getting some practice plans ready to go for spring break or for spring football in the next week. So, I mean, there are some requirements obviously that I do have to manage, but it's not necessarily as bad as I thought it would be. But you know, obviously there are some more demands coming in the future. So
I grew up as a coach's son, and I remember having that same kind of conversation with my father, and I had that exact same rule. I couldn't be on the sideline until I was alert and responsible enough to get out of the way of a play coming my way.
That's dangerous.
Yeah, for sure.
I've been looking at my play call sheet a couple times, and I've gotten taken out. So I don't know. I don't even know if I'm good at that either.
Right. Coach, we're going to jump into our two-minute drill here and pick up the tempo. Some real quick question and answer. So schematically, what's the toughest defense to face?
Teams with better talent and teams that run stacking, slanting, high pressure style.
What's your favorite goal line play?
We call it shake. It's basically the pick route that won the national championship.
Turf or grass?
Well maintained grass.
What's your favorite backfield set?
No back, empty.
Day game or night game?
Night.
If you had to run your offense from one formation, what would it be?
Empty.
What's your favorite quote?
It's a patent quote. Success in war depends upon the golden rules of war, which are speed, simplicity, and boldness.
Should the kickoff be eliminated from the game?
No.
If you could pick one football coach from the past to learn from, who would it be?
Earl Red Blake, the national championship winning coach from Army.
How about one from the present?
Dabo Swinney.
Coach, great job on the two-minute drill. And here's the final question. What's the one thing you would point to as giving your teams, your units, the winning edge?
And we talked about this a little bit, and I'm going to expand on it. You know, there's four ways that I believe you can level the playing field and compete in high school football: talent, culture, coaching staff, and your systems, your OD and special teams systems. And unfortunately, as a high school coach, you can't really control the talent aspect of it. So as a head coach, you have to control the other three, and you have to be extremely focused and prepared and learn and develop in those other three areas. And to me, that's what's going to give us the winning edge on a Friday night. It's our culture, the blueprint that I talked about in the beginning, the classroom activities that we're doing with our leaders and our U crew. It's those core values and behaviors that we developed and that we're going to consistently teach and empower our kids to learn and consistently hold them accountable to those behaviors and values. And then our coaching staff, you know, I've got what I would argue is one of the best coaching staffs in the state of Florida. And I'd put them up against anybody. And when I hired my coaches, I told every single one of them, I said, a lot of them, I just, you know, there were some of them that just stayed on, but I said that, and Brian Kite talked about this, that number one, you're an enforcer of, and a teacher and you care and you love these kids and you build trust and you build an identity and you reinforce the culture and you teach them how to meet that culture. You're a teacher and a communicator and a leader and a role model first. And second is football knowledge. And I've made that a priority, especially in the hiring process, that I want those qualities first, and then the football knowledge to me will come. That's the easy stuff, like Brian talked about. And then the third thing that's going to give us the winning edge is our systems that we talked a little bit about, and defensively and our special teams, we're going to be uncommon in those as well. So to me, that's our winning edge. We're uncommon here at Satellite Football.
Coach, how can our listeners connect with you?
I'm on Twitter at Coach K Satty, SATTY. Also, you can send me an email to my school email. It's ki2mseyed@brevardschools.org.
Coach, really appreciate you taking the time to be with us. You certainly have a great plan in place, so good luck to you here in this first year as a head coach. And also thank you for serving our country in the military. That's an important role, and thank you for the time that you spent serving the country.
Thank you, Keith. We appreciate you, and we appreciate the podcast. I know I listen to it all the time. It's what a fantastic resource that you've provided for us coaches, and it's awesome to hear the conversations that you have with the coaches around the country and even just the leaders of the key things that are going on in our game. And then on top of that, thanks to USA Football for all they're doing for the game too.
Three key takeaways from our interview with Coach Kimmy. Number one, develop uncommon leaders that will change the world. I really liked what he had in his mission there, that his mission was to educate young men to be able to be uncommon leaders. And that's something that permeates his program. Number two, positive energy as a force. He talked about body language, how he has his players, if they're tired, they could take an athletic knee, and even having a practice DJ. And number three, I really liked his bullet tempo. I think it's a tempo that all teams can use, and using a up-tempo play, prescribed, predetermined play for short yardage, goal line, and even after an explosive play.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.